Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Tom Beal. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Susan, and hello, all our listeners.
We'll start our program today with a short interview with Kathy Schnabel about the Arc of Story County, the service organization we are featuring this month in our Community Service Appreciation Series. Then we'll hear from Peter Riley from the Ames International Orchestra Festival, IOFA, telling us about the upcoming concert of the Australian Chamber Orchestra, which will perform at C.Y. Stevens on Monday, March 24th at 7:30 p.m. And then we will have an extended conversation with Peter.
About music in Ames.
About music in Ames.
Well, first, as part of our Community Service Appreciation Series, we have an interview with Kathy Schnabel, board member of the Arc of Story County, from KHOI reporter Roxanne Thompson.
You are listening to Community Service Appreciation on KHOI FM Radio. The program features agencies and organizations that provide valuable services to our community members. This is Roxanne Thompson, and I am your host for today's show. Today's program recognizes the Arc of Story County. The Arc of Story County is an advocacy-based nonprofit organization that provides services by partnering with local businesses, providers, and community members to enrich the lives of people with disabilities. We will be speaking with Kathy Schnabel, a board member and parent. Welcome, Kathy. Thanks for being with me today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Kathy, can you share with our listeners your connection to the Arc of Story County?
Well, first of all, I have a 25-year-old son with an intellectual disability, and he takes part, especially in the Active Lifestyles programs. I've also been on the board since, I think, the summer of 2010, and I also help with the swim team.
Kathy, how long have you been involved with the ARC?
Well, I went to my first meeting in 1988 when my son was only about 3 months old. Back then, we had coffee mornings for mothers. We don't do that anymore because most mothers are too busy to do that. But that support, just getting to know other people in a similar position, was very helpful.
Has the organization's vision or mission changed over the years?
The original mission, I think, was to get basic services here in the community. So those people that started the organization back in the 50s, I mean, we, the current members, owe an enormous debt of gratitude to them. Because of what they did, our children are able to live here in their own community. They received a free and appropriate education through the local school districts. And so what the ARC does now tends to focus more on providing social and recreational opportunities and also protecting the rights and services that our children are now entitled to.
Great, thanks. Do you care to share how the ARC has benefited your family member and you?
Yes, the ARC has just been a lifesaver for our family, particularly when our son graduated from high school in 2008. And he had some work. He was working about 8 hours a week, but for the most part, he was home. And we had not realized how much his entire social life was connected to school. And he had friends at school, but he did not have the skills to know how to maintain those friendships once he was out of school. And he got very lonely and sad. And, you know, none of us has been particularly athletic. So at first we thought, well, why do we need to do Special Olympics? Mm-hmm. We're not a big sporting family. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as he got involved with the Active Lifestyles program, his whole life turned around. He was able to make connections with friends again. He had something to work towards. And he's on our Active Lifestyles swim team. Mm-hmm. You know, and not only so he has the social connections, boy, I'll tell you that swimming, it's an analogy for everything in life for him. You know, you just have to work hard to get where you're going. So, yeah, the ARC has just been invaluable for our family.
That's great. Kathy, can you think of ways that our fellow community members can reach out to individuals with an intellectual or physical disability to make them feel supported and part of our community?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to offer a big thank you to the entire community of Ames, because I think for the most part, everybody is extremely wonderful to people with disabilities, mm-hmm. to a degree that I could not have imagined when my son was a baby. He does work in the local Hy-Vee store. His coworkers are wonderful and inclusive. He rides Cy-Ride around town. The Cy-Ride drivers and people go out of their way to be awesome. Helpful to our son. So I think just recognizing that these are people like anybody else, and they just have a few more obstacles to overcome. Some people with intellectual disabilities, including my son, have some speech issues, so they can be a little bit hard to understand. You know, just being patient. And mm-hmm. I know in the case of my son, you know, and I'm sure most people, they're used to being asked to repeat themselves. So don't hesitate to say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Could mm-hmm. you repeat it? And just inviting people to do things. You know, Ben's been invited to weddings.
I'm happy to hear that our community does so well at supporting and reaching out. Kathy, for more information about the ARC, are memberships offered? Is there a newsletter, et cetera, so people can become more informed?
Absolutely. I would just recommend that people go to thearcstory.org, and all the information about how to become a member and how to get a newsletter is on that website.
Great.
Yes, you know, memberships are a large part of how we support our organization and receive the funds that we need to do our advocacy. We have a fall membership drive, and we would love anybody to become a member of the ARC of Story County and help support the important work that we do.
Thank you. You've been listening to Community Service Appreciation on KHOI FM Radio. Today we've been recognizing the ARC of Story County, an organization that advocates and provides services to enrich the lives of people with disabilities in our community. We've been speaking with Kathy Schnabel, board member and parent of the ARC. For more information, go to www.thearcstory.org or contact the ARC at 515-232-9330. Your comments and suggestions regarding Community Service Appreciation or any other KHOI broadcast are welcome. Please send your comments to khoiradio@gmail.com. If you enjoyed the program, please tell your friends. Thank you for listening. Until next time, keep your ears tuned to KHOI Community Radio.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Tom Beal, together with my co-host, Susan Franson. And we've been hearing a report from the ARC of Story County, the community organization we're featuring this month. Now we'll be talking with Peter Riley from the board of the Ames International Orchestra Festival, also known as IOFA, to tell us about the Australian Chamber Orchestra, which will be playing in Ames next Monday, March 24th, at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium, beginning at 7:30 p.m. Some of you may have heard a more in-depth report of the concert and other events in connection with the Australian Chamber Orchestra a couple of weeks ago on Carol Horowitz's new program, KHOI Preview of the Arts. She'll be talking about events coming up at the end of the month during her show tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m.
Let's not keep Peter waiting. I'm eager to hear what he has to say. He told me that he'd actually heard the Australian Chamber Orchestra in Brisbane, Australia. What were you doing in Australia?
I was on a short sabbatical. I teach in chemical engineering at Iowa State, and we spent February through April of 2012 in Brisbane. And the ACO tours around Australia. They really have no home city. And so they came to Brisbane, and we saw them at the Performing Arts Center there.
Is there anything particularly remarkable about this orchestra?
There are 17 of them, led by a very famous violinist, Richard Tognetti. They play standing up. I've never seen that before, except for the cellos. The cellists sit.
They must, if they're standing up, they must be a pretty young orchestra. Is that right?
They're pretty young. There are one or two people that are older, but mostly they're in their 20s and 30s, and they come from all over the world. These days, musical organizations are not just from the country that where they're headquartered, but the musicians are worldwide, sort of like professors.
Hey, Peter, I noticed the picture in the paper of the orchestra, and what struck me was that unlike most orchestras who dress very formally and have dark suits and dresses and so on, these folks are dressed in casual clothes, and I kept thinking, they've got to be from Australia.
Living in Australia is a lot of fun.
I understand that they have quite an interesting schedule when they come to the U.S.
Well, the U.S. and Canada, they come every year. They have appeared in over 250 different cities. They're going to be 5 days in Banff, Alberta, and then they're going to be in Kenosha, Wisconsin, then New York, then Chicago, and then here. And the next day, they go home.
I have to ask you how it is that we were able here in our wonderful town to attract this international orchestra.
Well, we have, of course, a wonderful concert hall. It holds 2,700. It's the Iowa building of the 20th century, voted by the Iowa architects. And that's a big attraction to play in such a wonderful place.
And I believe we also have the Iowa State Center organization. Is that they're co-sponsors, really, aren't they?
They're co-sponsors. They do the booking. The IOFA board, which I'm a member, advises. But in the end, Mark North and Patty Cotter and Sarah Compton and a few others put it all together.
Peter, I want to ask you something you said, which I'm still ruminating about. An orchestra that stands for the entire performance, I would think they would get tired after a while doing that.
It helps to be young.
Well, do you have any idea how this tradition with them got started?
I have no idea. Some of their literature shows them balancing on chairs. You think, my gosh.
An acrobatic orchestra.
They're luckily a little less acrobatic when they actually play.
Will there be a reception prior to or right after the performance where individuals can talk to them and maybe ask them about this?
I don't know. Good question. I have no idea. But
well,
someone will be able to answer that.
Right. We'll find out that night for those people who are going to this great event.
Now, incidentally, I would like to mention, in terms of finding out information about the orchestra, there is an exceptionally good website for this. And I recommend the way to get that would be to Google Australian Chamber Orchestra Iowa State Center, and they have a picture of this casually dressed orchestra with their cowboy boots and blue jeans, and they also have some videos of them playing, and they do wear black when they play.
Well, not really. You can challenge tradition only so far, right?
And wearing jeans at a concert is probably a little much for classical music.
Well, even the audience, I think, would be criticized if they came that casually dressed. Are you on the... Did you say you were on the board that helped to select the orchestras that come to Ames?
I'm on the board. I'm a new member. There are lots of members who've been on it up to 6 years. And it's fun to be on this board because you have so many choices of orchestras that do tour. And there are a number of people who are so proficient at this. And we have, of course, a wonderful staff at the Iowa State Center.
Well, when I first came to Ames in 1975, everybody talked about the spectacular array of orchestras that came to our relatively little town. It was quite remarkable. And the fact that the tradition has continued for me, 40 years, is really remarkable.
It is. We're very lucky, and it's nice to be around a big university. It's nice to be in a town, Ames, with such wonderful surroundings, the towns around us. So we have a big advantage. We have one disadvantage. We have another big house only 35 miles away, and, of course, they are competitors of ours.
I was going to mention or ask you about that because when I first came, that was not a competitor. And people would drive up from Des Moines. In fact, when there was a big event in Ames, and I don't mean a sporting event, the traffic coming up from Des Moines was quite remarkable.
I used to walk through the parking lot outside of Stevens Auditorium looking at the license plates, and in Iowa you can do that. You see the counties, and of course they were coming from all over the place.
Do we still attract an almost statewide audience for some events?
We're the only house in the state that brings in orchestras from out of state. There are, of course, a number of local orchestras. There's one here in Ames. There's Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Waterloo, Davenport. But we are alone. in bringing in touring orchestras, which is really very nice.
I agree, and it's probably expensive, so it does require the enthusiastic support of the people in our area.
It sure does. It also requires donations, of which many of us participate.
And has that been going well in the last few years?
As far as I know, yes.
Well, you said you were a new member. How long will your term be on the board?
3 years with the possibility of being renewed once more.
Well, obviously, you're on the board because you have a special interest in symphony orchestras and in classical music. I assume that's the primary reason you were able to be selected.
Well, of course. And then I got a phone call. I think, actually, they were looking for my wife, Ray, and they got me.
Well, does she regret the fact that she's not on the board?
She's on a bunch of other things. I think she's very happy
to
farm this off to me.
Well, I wonder if it isn't time for us to hear a little of the Australian Chamber Orchestra. Let's take a listen. Well, that was the Australian Chamber Orchestra, who will be coming to Ames on Monday. And what a glorious sound. It's just fabulous. Peter, you said you had a chance to hear them in their home country?
I heard them in Brisbane. They come there about three or four times a year, usually for one day. I think they have a lot of airplane bills going around orchestra or going around Australia. It's a big place.
And how large is the ensemble?
It's 17, and they're coming here with all 17 plus two soloists. One's a trumpeter and the other is a pianist, and we'll be hearing the pianist.
And we mentioned earlier in our interview that these are fairly young musicians, and they perform standing up. However, one big change from the wonderful picture that we've seen in the newspaper is that they will be dressed more formally than the picture has them.
I think that's true.
Well, you are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've just heard a selection played by the Australian Chamber Orchestra, which will be playing at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium on Monday, March 24th at 7:30 p.m.
And we are now scheduled to be talking with Dan Johnston, recipient of the Louise Noun Award given annually by the ACLU of Iowa, to honor people who have contributed significantly to the defense of civil liberties. Unfortunately, our phone connections on both ends are not behaving properly, and so since we have a live guest with us, we'll just keep him in.
We'll take advantage of the fact that you were kind enough to come in to talk to us about this great event coming up on Monday.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we were talking earlier about attractions that we're able to get to Ames. We're not the biggest city in Iowa, or certainly not in the Midwest, and yet we've been able to attract spectacular musical ensembles from around the world in the past, and more recently from around the United States. And can you comment on how the board extends the invitations? What are you looking for as you seek these groups out?
Well, there's quite a process here. First of all, you know what orchestras will be touring and at what times. And sometimes the dates are very, very favorable, and sometimes there are several are touring at the same time, and you can only take one of them. And the Iowa State Center staff, specifically Mark North, comes to our board and gives us some choices. And we, knowing what the potential music will be, what will be played, we say, well, we'd like to hear that. This hasn't been played in many years in Ames. There are some people with pretty good memories for this, especially this year's chair, Carl Quiasta. And we start that way, and then we don't deal with the cost of this. That's not our business. Our business is to think of what the community would like to hear and what we would like to hear, and if the orchestra has been here before, how well they were received.
What kind of music would you say the folks in Central Iowa seem to be most interested in hearing?
I think they like the old war horses. European music is a very good choice, usually. We're getting a Mexican orchestra next year, the State of Mexico Orchestra. And they will be playing Spanish and Mexican music, which is a very nice change.
We have a lot of Russian music this year, and I was really wondering the Town and Gown that's coming up, and that incidentally Carol will be talking about on her program, KHOI Previews the Arts. Carol, being Carol Horowitz, will be doing KHOI Previews the Arts tomorrow, that March 20th.
And we're so lucky to have Town and Gown here also. They give different venues. They're here in the City Auditorium, and they're at the Martha Ellen Tye Recital Hall. And so we get orchestras of different sizes and different localities. It's very nice.
I wonder if for some listeners, they may not understand what the Town and Gown program is all about. Could you explain it briefly?
Town and Gown is, I'm a listener. I'm not on any sort of function with them. But they're an organization that is run, I believe, partly with the cooperation of the Department of Music at Iowa State. And they don't have any events in Stevens Auditorium. But as I mentioned, they play in the City Auditorium at the City Hall, and they play at Marth Ellen Tye Recital Hall on the campus.
Which is a wonderful room.
That's a wonderful room with wonderful acoustics. And they bring in soloists or small groups or occasionally, I think, a small chamber orchestra. So the activities between IOFA and between other things that happen at the Iowa State Center and what Town and Gown does are quite complementary. We're really lucky.
Yes, we're lucky to have both Town and Gown and IOFA in Ames, and the Australian Chamber Orchestra coming with their youth and vigor. And to illustrate that, I'd like to play the music from a YouTube clip from The Glide, a multimedia performance combining ocean and surfing footage by John Frank with music performed by Richard Tognetti and the Australian Chamber Orchestra. The music is performed in front of a screen showing video footage of surfing and ocean waves. The music in this section is Elgar's Sospiri. The piece is a brilliant collaboration between the Australian Chamber Orchestra and filmmaker John Frank, Richard Tognetti's first exploration of the links between the ocean, surfing, and music resulted in the documentary Musica Surfica, winning Best Feature Awards at film festivals in the USA, Brazil, South Africa, and France. In this new multimedia performance, John Frank's awe-inspiring ocean photography and footage glides across the big screen, mingling with the Australian Chamber Orchestra's live performance. The Glide has been performed in Sydney and Melbourne after performances in Maribor, Noosa, and New York. To find it, go to YouTube, search Australian Chamber Orchestra The Glide, and you'll go right to the video that goes with this sound clip. Enjoy.
Peter, you said earlier that you're hoping it hasn't quite been nailed down, and I hope I'm not jeopardizing the potential booking, but that we may have an international orchestra from Russia coming soon.
I think that's so. And there are a lot of Russian orchestras, and it's amazing how good they are.
You know, one of the great things about these international orchestras and the traveling they do is that it gives us a chance to tell these folks in other countries that we really care about their culture and so on. We're going to continue our discussion, but first we want to remind you that you're listening to KHOI Community Radio 89.1 on your FM dial. And our station serves Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas. And we do invite you to give us a call if you're hearing our programs and tell us what you like and what you're what you'd like to hear that we're not doing, because this is a community radio station supported by the community. We are not funded by the government or by any of the universities or any other funds. We rely entirely on our listeners to help us keep going. We've been on the air about a year and a half, and we're eager to provide a programming that you may not have been able to hear elsewhere. And one of the programs and the program areas that we've been featuring since we went on the air is classical music. We have been broadcasting classical music virtually every day, and that includes a full array of music selections on Sunday. And we're also broadcasting opera performances. So if you are interested in hearing orchestras and the wonderful classical music selections, we do play them here on our station. And we also, as we were commenting earlier during the hour, are very fortunate in Ames to have some terrific live performances, some great orchestras coming to our city, and we have a great one coming on Monday, the Australian Chamber Orchestra, featuring 17 musicians, including a couple of soloists, and they're going to be at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium. And so we're really lucky to have them here, and we've been talking about this upcoming event.
We have a Peter Riley with us, and I know that you're very interested in classical music and knowledgeable, but you have a day job. What is your life like outside of the concert hall?
I am a distinguished professor in the Department of Chemical and Biological Engineering at the university. This is the end of my 40th year at Iowa State.
Well, congratulations. But I guess you don't get asked to come on the radio and talk about that very often, do you?
This is a lot of fun. It's completely different than being in a lecture hall before 40 to 80 students.
Well, I had a little experience with that as well, Peter. I retired just last May after 38 years. I didn't quite make it as long as you, but I had great joy and satisfaction teaching journalism at Iowa State.
But you did have a chance to be in front of the microphone as even part of your job. Wasn't that something?
Well, some years ago when Iowa State University owned WI Television, we launched the local morning news shows. Prior to that, even the Des Moines stations were not doing local television news early in the morning because they thought nobody was watching. I think they all thought they were listening to radio, which they should be doing, I guess. But in any case, we launched the morning newscasts, and we required all of our broadcast students to come in. They had to get up quite early. It was really a sobering experience for them. But some of them, if they were very good, got to be on the air and read the news and do the weather. And at the end of that period, I did it for about 10 years, I was getting up at 2 o'clock, getting to WI at 3. We got our first newscast on the air at 6, and I left at 8:30, and then I went and taught all day. Okay. And by Friday, I was a walking zombie, but it was great fun to be involved in daily journalism.
Well, you had a wonderful story about, since we've had such a rough winter, that was when you told the story about the time that you had to walk.
Oh, goodness. Well, I live about a year, about a mile or so from the station, perhaps a little further. And one day, there, we must have had 3 feet of snow, perhaps. Couldn't get my garage door open. So here it was early, cold, and the streets hadn't been plowed. And so I trudged all the way to WI Television and finally got there, got the door open, got everything going in. I was hoping the students would arrive. I wouldn't have to put this thing together by myself. And they did. It was a real stern experience for them to get up in the morning and get there and show up. And if they didn't show up, they heard about it.
Well, actually, though, that's a great feeling when you have adversity and you have people working with you who come forward and help you.
Well, I think they felt very responsible. And how great it was that every graduate of our program could go out into the job world seeking that first job and say, I had professional television experience, because they had at least 3 months where they had to write the news and, in some cases, put it on the air. So we had a spectacular practical laboratory when Iowa State University owned WI Television.
Yes, when was that sold?
Well, let's see. I've kind of blanked it out. It's not a pleasant experience for me to have lost that great facility, but it's been more than 10 years. I think listeners know that the station was sold and was moved from Ames to first to Des Moines, and now it's in West Des Moines. And it's a commercial television station operated for profit. When WI went on the air, it was a commercial television station. They sold advertising, but their goal was not primarily to make money, but rather to both serve the community. They were the first television station in Central Iowa, I may add, but to serve the community, but to give students and others associated with the university a chance to get experience and to spread the message about all the great work that was going on campus. In some ways, it was kind of a form of the extension, but it wasn't part of the extension program. But Iowa State University has done some great things, and one of the responsibilities, I think, of universities like ours is to tell people what we're doing in chemistry and other areas. And so having a fantastic communication facility like a television station was a real asset for the university.
Well, you know that the way we got that station was through chemistry. You know that story?
Well, I think I do, but I'd rather have it told by someone who knows more about it than
I. Peter, do you know the story of Frank Spedding and the uranium?
I certainly know about Frank Spedding, and I know that he was in charge of enriching uranium during World War II, but I don't know how he was connected to WOOI.
Well, the story was that during the Manhattan Project in World War II, there were several major places where work was done, Berkeley, University of Chicago, and others, of course, Oak Ridge and Los Alamos. But one of them was Ames. And in Ames' chemistry department, there was a very fine chemist, Frank Spedding, who was specialized in purifying metals. And he and his group purified over a ton of uranium here. And after the war, as a thank you for that, when asked what they could do, he said, we'd like to have a television station.
And that was in the 40s when television was still new.
And yes, it was.
And exciting.
Yes, it was. And so, in a way, those who don't appreciate the Manhattan Project can say, well, we paid dearly for that station, and we sold it for $12 million.
$12.5 million, and that included the receivables of about $1.5 million. It was a giveaway. I wanted to say that there used to be a little wooden building right next to what is now the Journalism Building, Hamilton Hall on campus. And the story I'm told was that it was called the Popcorn Research Laboratory. And but no one was supposed to go in there. But this is where research on popcorn was supposed to be going on, when in fact that wasn't what was happening there. And periodically there would be little explosions, so the story told. It's maybe apocryphal, but it's such a great story, you can't help but tell it. Anyway, and today, if you go on campus, there is a stone with a plaque on it stating that that is where this research was undertaken. And ironically, right next to the student newspaper, but they never reported, maybe they didn't know what was really happening in that little building right next to the journalism building.
Wow, they sure didn't want them to know.
Well, no, and I think everybody at that time felt that there was a responsibility to protect the secrets of our nation, because after all, we were in World War II and the world, it was a dangerous place. And very, very few American citizens were willing to do anything that might put the country at risk and to expose secrets, I think. And there was a real effort not to do that.
No, and I think people couldn't imagine what was going on.
No, well, atomic energy was mysterious, and even for many years afterwards, we weren't quite sure what it was.
Well, I remember when I was a child during the war, I heard, they've split the atom. Of course, I didn't know what an atom was, but of course, that had happened quite a while before, but this was current scuttlebutt in the... I think I heard about it in a dance class. Did you know that they split the atom?
Well, I remember as a child, my father and a neighbor sitting in the living room, very somber, very stern-faced, and the radio was on. And I went over, and there was a lamp, a floor lamp, and I thought it was dark in there. It was just the little kid, you know. So I reached up to turn the light on, and there was, you know, and there was static on the radio, and my father said, "Chop, sit down quietly." And if I remember correctly, they were listening to a description of the atomic bombs being dropped in Japan on the radio, and the war just coming to an end at that point. And so this was a very frightening thing. We didn't have any idea what it was. And, of course, later, I was of the generation when we had exercises in school where we were told to hide, you know, under our desks and so on. That was to protect us from an atomic bomb attack. Well, you know, just kind of rounding the bend here, but I was thinking about chemistry and how much chemistry has impacted our life today, and how one of the great companies of America used to have the slogan, better things through... Chemistry is a little more, maybe a little more controversial today, because there is a lot of criticism of chemicals that might be harmful to us. But as you are doing your research in chemistry, I wonder how you feel about the present understanding, let's say, of the general public toward chemistry.
I should say that I am a chemical engineer. It would be nice if the general public knew a lot more about chemistry and about chemicals. We wouldn't live without chemistry. It's brought a great number of things to us. I myself do a lot of biology. I work with enzymes.
Or do you think that enough students are taking chemistry in high school and maybe preparing for the field?
Well, at the moment, we're overwhelmed with students.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh.
Why would you say? What's the big attraction, do you think?
I think it's because there are jobs there. I've never taught such a big class as I'm teaching this year.
But do you see some bright students coming through the program?
Well, let's hope so. Yes, of course, there are some.
What is the big field, would you say, for students going into chemistry?
Well, everyone seems to want... we're talking chemical engineering here.
Oh, that's true, yes.
Yes, I'm not...
Well, just briefly distinguish between chemistry and chemical engineering.
Well, chemical engineering, like all other engineering, is so heavily mathematical, much more so than chemistry. I, myself, was an undergraduate chemist, and I switched to chemical engineering as a grad student. So I've seen both sides of it. They're really quite different, although chemical engineers take an awful lot of chemistry.
But you didn't like the beakers and the bubbling...
We do beakers also, let me tell you. No, it's not I didn't like it. Well, actually, it was a funny thing. I didn't think I wanted to go all the way to a PhD. I thought maybe I'd stop at a master's in chemical engineering, and once I got into it, I just kept going, and it never occurred to me that I would be in academia. I went and got a job at DuPont, that company that used to advertise better things from chemistry. And then I went to the University of Nebraska for 6 years, and I've been here for 40.
You can't get out of the Midwest, apparently.
I'm an Easterner. I'm originally from New Jersey.
Well, so you like it in the Midwest?
It's been 46 years.
Too late to change.
But for those who haven't been around since C.Y. Stevens was built in 1969, and AOFA started with a week of the New York Philharmonic, incredible. Talk a little about the early days of AOFA when they packed C.Y. Stevens.
I wasn't here in 69 when the hall opened. I came in 74. Of course, symphony orchestras in Iowa were a pretty rare thing, so, and we didn't have any halls near us, so of course we had a monopoly position. And I think in the first few years I was here, we heard the Boston, the New York, the Philadelphia, the Los Angeles, the Chicago, a number of international orchestras. It was quite a time. And I think one story that's come down through the years, through this now 40 years, is Seiji Ozawa was here, and they were here for a couple of days, and so they got a softball game, and he banged up part of his body, and he had to conduct sitting down.
That was the grand opening. They arranged entertainments. That was the thing that the orchestras loved, and not just the American orchestras. The Vienna, much later, the Chinese National Orchestra. But anyway, to get back to that first week, they came to people's homes for receptions. They went on bicycle rides. You were probably part of AOFA, so you could tell me.
Well, the Concertgebouw was here from Amsterdam, and there was a reception for them across the street in the Octagon. And my wife, Ray, and I went to it, and the whole orchestra was there. And so on the spur of the moment, I invited five of them for dinner. And they all came, and they discussed their likes and dislikes of different conductors and different orchestras. And a few years later, I was in the Netherlands giving a seminar, and I asked if the Concertgebouw was playing while I was there, and someone looked it up. Of course, there was no internet at the time. They made a phone call. They said, well, they're playing this night, and what's more, it's not part of their subscription. So I got on the train from Delft, and I went up to Amsterdam, and I walked into the concert hall, and I walked right into the dressing room, and I tapped four of our five dinner guests on the shoulders, and they said, what are you doing here? And then they had us for dinner.
What a great story.
That is a great story. I have a very different story. The Cleveland Symphony Orchestra was here once, and this was when they were still planning activities. We are not big symphony orchestra goers, but we knew the people who were, and Fritz in his office got a call from Sylvia McCormick, who was the great organizer of the original AOFA. And she said, we have two musicians here from Cleveland who want to go sailing. Well, we happened to sail a small boat, a boat that ironically was designed and built near Cleveland. It's called a Thistle, and so well known there. And so Fritz said, well, I guess I can take the afternoon off. And he took, I believe it was the tuba player and the percussionist, big guys. And they went out and they sailed at Little Wall Lake, which is where we were sailing in those days. And they had a grand time, and they were really pleased to be sailing in a thistle. They had good wind. Good wind is, well, that's what you really need. And so when we got home, Fritz said, well, we don't have tickets yet, but we have to hear this. And it was a Strauss evening. They were playing Till Eulenspiegel and Thus Spake Zarathustra. And, of course, this was in the days when the hall was packed, so the only seats we could get were right down in what would be the orchestra pit if the orchestra wasn't on stage. So we were about the first or second row, really close, so we could watch them in their concert attire. Of course, the percussion is important in those pieces.
Well, this has been a great hour. Boy, do we want to thank you very much for coming in, Peter. What a great discussion we had, and how great it'll be to hear the Australian Chamber Orchestra on Monday night here in Ames.
It's been a pleasure.
Yes. This is KHOI Community Radio, and today we've been talking with Peter Riley, mostly, about the Australian Chamber Orchestra, which will be coming here on Monday, March 24th at 7:30 p.m. at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium. And earlier we heard from Kathy Schnabel and Roxanne Thompson about the Ark of Story County.
Right. Well, you've been hearing some wonderful music, too. The second movement from Serenade for Strings in C Major, Opus 48, by Tchaikovsky, performed by the Australian Chamber Orchestra from the CD Tchaikovsky Orchestral Masterpieces.
Your hosts today have been Tom Beale and Susan Franzen, assisted by reporter Roxanne Thompson. Local Talk is engineered by Rebecca Brown. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we produced since we went on the air in 2012 on our website. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There you will find lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses, though we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.